This is a Times Online podcast.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to a very special episode 54, sub-episode A of The Bugle, our special Thanksgiving special for the week beginning Monday the 1st of December 2009, with me, Andy Zaltzman, here in London, and no one else anywhere in the world. I'm afraid, Buglers, something terrible has happened. It's John. He's away for the weekend. I don't know if I'll ever hear from him again. It is almost certain that I will, probably on next week's show at the latest. But I don't know it for sure. There might be an asteroid. Anyway, because the whole of America has bunked off for the weekend to give thanks to themselves for whatever they want, they won't even open a studio for even as crucially important a podcast as The Bugle. So there is no live John this week, but we can offer you an appetising menu of bits of previous shows that were too funny to be broadcast at the time and had to be put in a very special fridge at Times HQ in London until they'd cooled down a bit. Plus, a special Thanksgiving special, Ask an American in Vegas, with a special twist, wait for that, and the one the world has been waiting for, the results of the Who or What is Jigme Wangchuck competition to win a copy of the Bugle Book of the Year 2008, 2009, 2010, and heck, 2007 as well, namely, My Book, Does Anything Eat Bankers? This is the week beginning Monday, the 1st of December. The beginning of the Christian calendar-based festival of Advent, which means that it is 2009 years to the day since the Virgin Mary got pregnant. Of course, it was much quicker in those days. Nowadays, if it happened, Advent would be 9 months long. But life was short back then, and you had to get on with it. 25 days, and then out you pop. The nine-month human gestation period is, in fact, a modern affectation brought about by affluent lifestyles and female laziness. Or at least, that's what I tell my wife. Anyway, even in an extra special edition such as this, some sections of the Bugle audio newspaper go straight in the bin. This week, a Christmas pre-preparation supplement. How to ensure your chimney is wide enough for a fat, arthritic old man carrying a bag full of cheap branded Taiwanese toys to squeeze down. And as the credit crunch bites, the Bugle gives you ideas for how to economise this Christmas. For example, start a bitter family feud in the first week of December, let it rumble on until Christmas Eve, and then make up. You don't have time to go to the shops, so you will have escaped the financial penalties inherent in having relatives, but you will end up giving each other the greatest gifts of all. Love, and simmering grudges that will flare up at all future family gatherings. And another money-saving tip, take up hardcore Christianity and rebel against the commercialisation of this once great festival. And finally, to keep your wonga in your wallet and your pony in your purse and your spondulics in your spunderpants, the Bugle tells you how to save money on Christmas lights by lighting small controllable fires on your Christmas tree using different chemicals to give different colour flames. Also, we investigate, what happened to the Virgin Mary's afterbirth? Rumour has it that one of the wise men ate it to see if it was magic and would make him fly. It is possible that Hollywood actress Reese Witherspoon has accidentally bought it on eBay. If she has, is she going to give birth to the next Messiah? Next week, we look at Jesus' divine meconium. Did one of the shepherds steal the infant Christ's first postnatal movement and spread it on his fields to see if it made the grass grow four times as tall? No one knows. We will guess. If you don't know what meconium is, look it up on the internet and then try to forget it. And we start with some 24,000 carat gems from deep in the Bugle archives. First up, cast your mind back, if you will, 1 week and a bit, to a story you would have heard about on last week's Bugle if Tom, our editor, hadn't cut it out. It's about a British government minister who knows what he wants and when he wants it. Other politics news now, and British Cabinet Office Minister Liam Byrne has been criticised due to a leaked memo which he apparently gave to his staff when he took up his office in 2006, saying, "I like a cappuccino when I come in, an espresso at 3 p.m, and my soup at 12:30. Now, he was criticised for this, John. The Conservatives claimed that he was being bossy and picky. But I like to think this is great news for Britain. It shows that a minister is taking his job seriously, John, because by making sure that people know in advance what hot drinks he wants, he is saving a potential 15 seconds per coffee order and probably a 30-second soup order, bearing in mind you probably have to find out what soups were on that day. That's a minute of extra ministerial time per day that he has freed up for himself. Now, that might not sound like a lot, but over the year, that adds up to 4 hours of extra governmental ministering. And so you just think, if more ministers had taken the trouble to be a bit more picky about what they want for their hot drinks, we could easily have stopped the credit crunch or prevented the war in Iraq. He's a hero, John.
Hey, John, that was pretty funny, wasn't it? John? Oh, sorry. Come on, Andy, plough on alone. You can do it. Moving on now to two historic moments from the history of the world's most historic audio newspaper for a visual world. Firstly, it's something that I know a lot of you want to hear again, the world's greatest ever birthday present.
And just time for a couple of emails. This one is from Sean Clothier. Whatever. He says, dear
You've been
John
in America too long, John.
Dear John D and Oliver, to celebrate the Bugle's first birthday, I suggest you celebrate with the help of an old Bugle friend. Yes, that's right, with a Hugo Chavezogram. Imagine him twirling, pouting and thrusting to a pumping soundtrack. Who knows? It could be so sexy that in 100 years, the new Bugle, a replacement for the current Bugle after Andy told a pun so powerful the studio imploded, could vote this special first birthday celebration a hottie from history. I'm just saying, Sean. Well, Sean, I've actually got a surprise extra gift for Andy here. Open the door, Andy.
La receta del diablo. Para analizar el discurso de ayer del presidente de los Estados Unidos. Como vocero del imperialismo vino a dar sus recetas.
Be honest, Andy, you love it. You love it, don't you?
I do love it. It's just a little bit awkward.
Getting in your personal space? Because that was an explicit instruction I gave him.
He's just whispering into my ear about how much he hates America.
You are a donkey, Mr. Bush.
So, there's an idea if you're struggling for Christmas present ideas for your family. You can now also get a Mugabegram, who will come to your house, destroy all working infrastructure and render you worthless. A Medvedevagram, in which someone dressed as Vladimir Putin will come and bark confrontational rhetoric at you. And for our Australian listener, a Kevin Ruddergram, in which an out-of-work actor will brighten your evening by giving a dull speech and not being John Howard. And now we go back exactly one Bugle year to perhaps the most significant development in the history of retrospective lust, the birth of hotties from history. Hang on to your bloomers. This is where it all began. Now, a commemorative Bugle audio poster to mark the Queen and Prince Philip's 60th wedding anniversary. The first time they have ever had a 60th wedding anniversary, so well done. Then, which means it's also 60 years since the Queen's hen party, when I believe she went to a karaoke night and sang Oops Upside Your Head. So here is to 60 more glorious years of marriage between the Queen and Philip. 60 years after their wedding, is it time for Philip to become king? Or is it time for someone else to get a go with the Queen?
And not a go with the Queen?
A go as the Queen's husband.
A go with the Queen. Pack up your things and do the right thing and check yourself into the Tower of London. This is not the first time, Andy, that you've made comments regarding the Queen of a sexual nature. And it's really starting to make me think a bit about, you know, whether you are attracted to the Queen in an inappropriate way.
Even if it was, I believe it's my patriotic duty to slightly fancy the Queen. After everything she's done for this country, you know, just boost her self-confidence a bit.
Is it the power that gets to you, Andy? Is it the fact she's Queen and is on coins? Or would you be attracted to plain old Elizabeth Windsor from down the road?
I just think there is something about a woman on a £10 note, or any banknote, and I feel the same about Florence Nightingale.
Oh, God. The Queen and Florence Nightingale.
I apologise to all royalists, but I maintain Nightingale was a hottie.
Oh, yeah.
So, that was on the 30th of November 2007. Exactly one and a bit years on. Can the world truly look at its past in the same way? No, it can't. The boundaries between history and seduction have been blurred forever. So, the nominations for the 2008 Hotties from History will close officially at 5 p.m. London time on Thursday the 4th of December. So do please get your final nominations in. And we will soon be putting up a downloadable Hotties from History calendar on the website. And hopefully in the near future starting a Hottiepedia page on the Bugle page. timesonline.co.uk/thebugle. And there will be an extended Hotties from History session next Bugle. And then, once we've all had a cold bath, we'll reassess the situation. Still to come, of course, the results of the Jigme Wangchuck Win My Book competition. But first, recorded live in Las Vegas. So explosive, we had to sit on it for a whole week to stop the world's axis simply snapping in half. Let's get ready to be humbled. It's the American and the American's brother in a special Ask an American and an American's Brother.
Well, it's Las Vegas, and really Las Vegas is the epitome of America. It's the unofficial capital of the United States of America. So who else, who better to bump into in the lobby of Caesar's Palace than you know him? He has irritated you. He's provoked you. He's made you think. Please welcome the American.
All right, how you doing? It's good to be with everybody in Vegas.
Well,
go time, huh? And I'm very excited to introduce. I got my brother down here with me. We're doing a little. We're looking at some property down here. It's a boom. It's a boom right now down here. It's a real boom.
It's unbelievable. You can get like condos. Forget about it. It doesn't even cost nothing.
You have no idea. We can just. Right now, we're buying up strips of desert like it's useless land.
You shouldn't do that. Really, your economy is about to implode. So
really,
don't do anything drastic.
Always do the opposite. That's what I heard.
That's what
do
I like.
Do the opposite. If guys like the economy's in the tank, buy.
Yeah.
That's what our dad always said.
That's bad advice.
That's what our dad always said. Let me tell you something, too. Before our dad went to prison, he used to say, do the opposite.
Yeah.
That was his defense, wasn't it?
And
so, American's brother, are you a property expert?
Not really, but, I got money, and I kind of have a keen eye for this sort of thing. And I saw the desert, and I was like, whoa, look at all this sand.
Yeah, but let's be honest. Let me tell the true story. We were up one night and we were watching Star Wars, the original one, and we're looking at Luke's place, and we're thinking if that's what the future is going to be, we should get in now.
Yeah,
because they live right in like a desert thing.
And he was smart. He was like a Jedi warrior.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean,
hold on. Let's not cite him as a business model. That man didn't exist. That was a character.
Says you. But on the flip side to that coin, you look at another movie where the future's a little less, less beautiful, and you look at a movie like The Road Warrior, again, desert landscape.
Now,
so either way, the future does hold a lot of desert potential.
You're setting yourself up for a financial disaster here.
I don't think so.
Says you.
Yeah, this is Vegas.
This is America, baby.
My guy.
There's no way to do anything wrong.
Yeah. So, I mean, will you be gambling, the two of you, while you're out here?
Obviously. Because think about this. If you were going to put, let's say, I'll make up a number, $100,000 down on some land. So if we gamble it, we could put down $200,000. We can double our money.
Yeah. I lost all my money already. Most of it anyway. I got a little left for tomorrow.
Yeah.
What did you do?
I don't even know the game. It's like Peng Gao. I don't know. It was a Chinese game, man. I didn't even understand what they were saying.
Yeah.
I just kept putting my money down. One time I win, two times I lose, one time I won. It's one step up, two back with these guys.
Yeah. That's why I'm telling you right now. Anytime I see one of them Chinese games or whatever it is, Hebrew, I don't know what for.
Well, they're doing that Chinese math.
I don't know what's going on there. The guys,
I didn't understand nothing.
You guys spinning an abacus around, all of a sudden I'm out $50. I don't know what's going on.
Vegas is a little bit of an anathema to us in Britain. We don't gamble much in Britain. It seems relatively...
I would put it that maybe you guys don't know how to live.
Yeah.
would you say that Vegas is the greatest city in the world?
I would say America's the greatest country, so where within a city as great as Vegas, it may be one of the greatest cities in the world. Of course, my preference would always be the Big Apple. But in Vegas, you have a small Big Apple called New York, New York.
I mean, just outside this Hotel Caesar's Palace, which is, some might say, a really horrifying version of ancient Rome, there is an Eiffel Tower. Mm-hmm. Which seems to me almost racist.
Well, I'm not going over there. I tell you that right now.
Yeah.
I don't care for the French.
Yeah.
Period. End of sentence.
Now we can agree on something.
There's one hotel in Vegas I've never been into, and it's that one.
Sometimes I'll go by there and I'll give the bellhop guy. I just give him a rap in the mouth.
You shouldn't do that. I mean, that's assault.
Does Vegas have its own laws? I mean,
God, no. There's no law in Vegas.
That's no law at all.
Comes here.
Right.
Wild West.
I mean, you want girls? You want gambling? You want fisticuffs? Whatever you want, you got it. It's Vegas, baby. Yeah. Light it on fire.
Light it on fire.
I mean, I see that you're actually... That's not a real gun, is it?
Yeah. It's a 357.
But don't worry. I got the bullets. I'm not going to give them the gun and the bullets.
Until later tonight when we get loaded like a fridge. You know what I'm saying?
That's right, baby. Double down.
You should not be carrying a gun around.
Double down.
It's not loaded. You heard him.
Double down.
What's the big deal? Jeez. Everybody's so freaky about the gun. It's not loaded, wizard.
obviously, it's Thanksgiving coming up.
God bless.
What is that?
Oh, man, it's a celebration.
Most beautiful holiday of all time.
I mean, it's in the name. Hello, Thanksgiving. We're giving thanks for being Americans.
Yeah. No, hold on. That's not... I don't think that's
Listen,
what it is.
We're thanking the Indians for so easily giving up all their land to us.
No, they... Yeah, because they gave it to us.
We sat down with the Indians.
We sat down. We go, are you sure you want to do this?
Yeah.
And they were like, here, take our land. Take our corn.
No, they were like, give us... They were like, give us some of those sweet Vegas-style casinos. You can have whatever you want. We were like, no problem.
Yeah. The Indians and the Pilgrims, they got together, and the Indians were like, welcome to America. Here's our land. Have some corn because it's going to be a long winter.
Yeah.
And we were like, no shit. That's beautiful.
Yeah, we were like, no shit. That's beautiful. And then what happened was we were like, yeah, here's some here's some guns and a little bit of land.
Right.
And thanks for everything. You know, you guys are great.
Yeah.
And then I don't know where they went. I guess they moved to something, but we got all the land.
I don't want to issue a nasty surprise, but that is absolutely not what happened to me.
Okay, Frenchie, why don't you tell me what happened?
It's just like when the Brits. It's just like when the Brits ran away after we threw their tea in the water. You know what I mean? Same thing.
Well, that's I'd rather you didn't bring that up. That's still a little bit sore.
What you got? I mean, what's your point? Okay, so look. Oh, another thing we do, big thing at Thanksgiving, very important, killing the turkey.
Oh,
and it's not just eating.
That is
that's
fun.
That's after. Find the turkey. The turkey hunt and kill is the best part.
It is
fun. No, that is not a tradition. Of what? A turkey hunt
it
and
is
kill.
Fun. We used to do it. We used to do like our dad used to take us. He'd say, you know what we should do? We should do it with knives.
Yeah.
And we would just go out, no guns, just knives.
We didn't have a 357 back then.
Yeah, we did not.
Knives and hatchets.
But tonight, I'll tell you what, we'll get a turkey tonight in Vegas. No problem with that gun.
Can I just ask you on the subject of Vegas and its position as a great gambling center? It has actually been overtaken by the city of Macau in China as the world's largest.
Yeah,
gambling
I heard
center.
Of Macau.
Do you not think being overtaken by Macau is a real? I mean, it's a real slur on American manhood, isn't it?
Nah, it's a joke.
Well, if it was happening, yeah, it's maybe worthy of war. But what, it's not happening.
Whoa, hold on, yeah. Hold on. Two things. One, it is happening. It's not worthy of war.
Hold on. You're telling me China's the number one gambling center in the world? You go f*** yourself. Okay, because Las Vegas, my friend, in the U.S. of A., that's where you go to gamble. That's where the world goes to gamble.
Okay.
That's a place called Macau.
Yeah, and I got another thing to say. Does Macau have two, I'm going to say two words, and you tell me if they got this in Macau. Celine and Dion. Do they have that there? No.
No, they don't have no Celine
I got another
Dion.
Two words. Bet and Midler. Do they have that there?
No, they don't. Okay, how about Chris Angel? You got that over
doubt
there in Macau?
Anyone in China that can fly? Doubt it.
Yeah. If the day ever dawns when Macau outdoes Las Vegas, the next step, Mushroom Cloud. That's it.
I would say I wholeheartedly agree with my brother, as usual. By the way, might I add, that is the opposite of what everyone would expect.
Andy, I think it might be safer just to give him this one. I don't know where you stand on this. It's just he does have this 357.
Right. Yeah, well, that doesn't concern me, John. I'm in London.
Well,
it's
something
work
about
here.
The way he said Mushroom Cloud as well.
Hey, we should play Russian roulette tonight. That'd be fun. I'll give you one bullet.
No, don't do that.
Yes, do that. Give me the bullet.
We'll do it. We'll get six hookers and we'll play with them.
Oh, no.
It's legal. That's legal here.
This is the worst place in the world. This is the worst place on earth.
This is the easiest place to get hookers. What are you talking about?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh, kill me. Kill me. Give me that gun. And
no bullets.
I'll shoot myself in the head.
Double down tonight. Don't forget.
Oh, we're going to double down.
We're going to double down.
Double down.
Double down.
I don't know what that means.
It's a betting term. It's high-stakes gambling.
You got to double down.
Forget about it. You don't know.
Andy, let me ask you a question. When you go out at night and you gamble, you double down?
Not habitually, but I'm Jewish. I'm not sure we're allowed to.
Yeah, no, you're allowed. You can double down. I know a couple of Jews who double down.
Yeah, what do you do over there anyway, Andy? What kind of name is that? It's funny. Say it, Andy.
No, Andy.
Yeah,
Andy. What do you do over there?
It's funny. I talk to him all the time. I never thought of that. Andy.
Andy. Say it like that. Andy.
Andy.
I think they've gone.
Double down.
Right. Oh, he's back.
Oh, he's back, right. Well, best of luck to the American and the American's brother.
The American and American's brother
have left the building.
2 weeks ago, I gave you, the 6.8 billion assumed Bugle listeners of the world, the chance to win a copy of my award-winning book, that award being Bugle Book of the Year, signed by any historical figure of your choosing. And all you had to do was get the answer to this question as wrong as possible. Who or what is Jigme Wangchuck? The real Jigme Wangchuck, of course, the newly crowned King of Bhutan. And let me tell you, we have had some spectacularly wrong answers from all 15 corners of the world, ranging from Britain to the United States of America and Uruguay. And some other places. And, well, it's been a tough one for the judges, namely me. And sadly, you can't all be winners. Although losers are still entitled to win a copy of the book by buying it in a shop or the internet. And there are consolation prizes, a free Bugle-endorsed middle name to add to your existing full name. All of these middle names are passport-friendly. Here are the ones for boy Bugle listeners: Cranklin, Pimptown, McHunk, Scabard, Bloodaxe, and Horace. And for girls, Peruvia, Ingrot, Hippopotama, Hootie Matuti, Jelly, with an I, not a Y. And for our South African listeners, Skalkeen. If you sent in an entry and it didn't win, treat yourself to a new middle name. I have to say, there was quite a lot of cynicism about us ignoring any non-UK-based entries due to the increased cost of postage. There's no need for that, people. No need. We're a very generous organisation at the Bugle. And we had quite an amazing range of entries, including a 49,000-word novel about Jigme Wangchuck, who, a little orphan boy from the kingdom of Sadabin, sent in by Tiffany Sears in West Roxbury, Massachusetts. And she wins the special prize for disproportionate effort to win a book, the prize for which is a book and a new pencil. Other than this, it's been very hard to decide the winner. We had to go not necessarily with the funniest entry, but with the most technically wrong. Therefore, anyone who suggested that Jigme Wangchuck is or was a person cannot win this competition. That can't be the most wrong, as the real Jigme Wangchuck is and was a person as well. Some entries were instamatically disqualified. For example, this one from Will Shelton, who writes, "Who or what is Jigme Wangchuck? Who cares? There's a weasel chomping on my privates." Thanks, Will Shelton from Kamak Village, Arkansas. You're disqualified because that's not an answer. Because to be the most wrong answer, you must first be an answer. The world's ugliest dog is not a 1960s tower block. The 60s tower block may be uglier, but that doesn't mean it qualifies for the Golden Pooch Balaclava Award. Here is the final shortlist of 5 entries. So from this shortlist, the winning 2 will be chosen by none other than our producer, Tom. Tom, are you ready? Tom, wake up. Wake up. Pencil and paper at the ready.
Yeah, I'm ready, Andy.
Here are the shortlisted entries.
Hit me.
And the first on the shortlist comes from Greg Lesko near Nagoya in the bugle-worshipping nation of Japan. And he writes, "The Jigme Wangchuck was a car produced in limited numbers during the mid-1980s by the Jigme Company, headed by Ronald Jiggles Jigme of Kentucky. It can only be described as the end result of a succession of unfortunate blunders. Beginning with the name, Jigme had been inspired by his memory of the explosion of Japanese automakers in the United States, and eventually decided on Wang as a nicely Japanese-sounding name, as his only real exposure to Asians at this point had consisted of seeing most of The Karate Kid, and he was pretty sure Gilbert Gottfried. He then decided the name needed an extra bit of oomph and settled upon adding the second half of Nunchuck to produce the final name for what would prove to be the only vehicle produced by Jigme Automotive. Much like Preston Tucker, designer of a car far ahead of its time, Jiggles made every attempt to develop what he felt would be a vehicle for the ages. The Wangchuck was among the first American-made automobiles to be designed to run primarily on corn ethanol, not for environmental or nationalistic reasons, but rather because Jigme's prior attempt at running a small business had been a moonshine distillery, which tragically failed to take into consideration the sudden and precipitous drop in the price of homemade spirits upon the repealing of Prohibition some half a century earlier. Furthermore, extensive wind tunnel testing was conducted, with an eye for reducing drag to a near-compulsive degree. However, it was only shortly before the production deadline that his son-stroke-nephew Duke noted that they had been testing the drag on the Wangchuck by moving sideways rather than forwards. Additionally, in what would prove a significant misstep for the future of the Wangchuck, Jiggles had demanded in a drunken stupor one evening during dinner that, as an anti-theft measure, the Wangchuck should have a combination lock by the ignition, allowing only those who knew the correct combination to start the car. Due to a wiring oversight, the only time the Wangchuck would refuse to start was upon having the proper combination dialed in, with all other combinations, including none at all, able to start the ignition without even a key. It was shortly after the Wangchuck had begun production that the company was served with a cease and desist order, as the Wangchuck's nighttime security slash carpool lane feature, a fold-out cardboard cutout of Mr. T that was built into the front passenger's side seat, was deemed a breach of trademark by T's lawyers. By this time, Jiggles' life insurance policies on his family members and employees had been cashed in, and the company went under without so much as attempting to fight the suit. Today, only one Jigme Wangchuck remains, and its whereabouts are officially unconfirmed, though there are rumours that it was sold under cover of night to Jay Leno. So, Tom, that was pretty wrong, wasn't it?
That was pretty wrong. Very, very far from being a Bhutanese king.
Right,
I like the southern motif. We shall see. Let's press on.
Right, so that's a strong early contender. Our next entry comes from Mark Loggins in Oakwood, Georgia, who writes, Jigme Wangchuk is an alcoholic beverage made by the Inuit people of Greenland. It's unique amongst alcoholic drinks because it is made from the blubber of native Jigme penguins. The process by which the drink is made is rather complicated. Already quite wrong, given that penguins don't live in Greenland. Well done. First, the penguins used to make it are killed by playing the hits of ABBA at them. The Jigme penguins, being native to Greenland, which is a Danish independent province, are deeply loyal Danish birds, so the sounds of the Swedish supergroup's music literally makes their brains explode. Next, the brain-exploded birds are butchered, and their raw blubber is chewed for 48 hours by a virgin Inuit girl for purely ritual purposes. Afterwards, it's boiled down, mixed with various and sundry native herbs and spices, and left to age in barrels made from the timber from Viking longships for up to 100 years, because they tend to forget where they bury the barrels. Eventually, when the barrels are dug up, it's tapped, and pure Jigme Wangchuk flows out. The word Wangchuk means vile concoction we sell to tourists as native culture. So, Tom, that sounds like a pretty wrong answer to me.
That is a very strong shade of bullshit there. I've got to say, that's a very good contender. I'd give that a strong 8.
Right, Mark Loggins looking a shoo-in already. And this answer is one of the best of, I guess, what was inevitably a large swathe of entries picking up on the genitalian nature of the wang part of the word Jigme Wangchuk. And this comes from Tom Rigby in Coventry, England. And Tom writes, Jigme Wangchuk is a sport and also happens to be the origin for the term wang, both for part of the male genitalia and for to throw something. Jigme Chuk, or wang as it is known colloquially, involves women picking up their partners by the genitalia and then, in a hammer-like motion, whirling them around and releasing them. The winner is the couple who have covered the most distance by this method in the allotted 2-hour time period. Ouch. In the recent World Championships held in Bogota, Colombia, the winners were the Peruvian couple Beatriz and Cristobal Donayer, with a winning distance of 12 miles, 162 feet and 4 inches. Unfortunately, this fell 1 foot short of the long-standing world record held by Georges and Marie Laffette of France, set in 1784. In Peru, news of the victory was hailed with large parties around the country, and President Alan Garcia presented the pair with a golden cast of his own wang in recognition. The practice of Jigme Chuk has its origins in 12th century Holland and is rumoured to have been started when a man who had severely displeased his wife was thrown out onto the street by his genitalia. This was such an effective punishment that soon the whole village was following the trend. Over time, this became distorted to the sport many now know and love today. Famous wangers are rumoured to have included Albert Einstein, Eisenhower, Pope Pius XII, Mahatma Gandhi and Michelle Pfeiffer. So, Tom Rigby, that's a pretty wrong answer.
I don't know, Andy. There's controversy over this one. Wang is a term for male genitalia.
All right.
That is actually correct. So
There is too much correctness in that answer.
There is.
Tom Rigby, you're out of the game. Bad luck. This very wrong answer comes from Ian Rodenhouse in Annapolis, in the fictional states of Maryland. I write to address your curiosity to know more about the nature of one Jigme Wangchuk, a curiosity which comes as no surprise since it is popularly rumoured to be one hell of an effective tactic used to adduce a victory in the ever less conventional board game of chess, and was in fact used at the most recent World Chess Championships in Bonn, Germany. As most laypersons know, the rules of chess have evolved to include rather showy exhibitions made by either player, brackets or team of players, to assert their dominance, a wonder that has surpassed even the expectations of domineering football fans. In a spectacular show of pomp and colour, the players display their teeth, long legs and sinewy hands in what ostensibly reduces their opponent to obeisance before squaring off at either end of the 16x16 board. The developing counter-conventional mindset manifested by such a display has eventually led to more subtle strategies at winning, namely the Jigme Wangchuk, a surreptitious replacing of the standard king piece with a slightly taller one. That's what it is, Tom. It's a novel technique in chess. And he continues, for as dictated by the US Chess Federation, the height of the king should be 85 to 100 millimetres, brackets 3.35 to 4.13 inches. This seemingly inconsequential task is considered advantageous because of the importance placed on a perceived dominance one player has over another. When a player is convinced by the size of his own king, he considers himself at the advantage and generally performs slightly better in the match. Naturally, as the method has become more popular, it has come to be a competition of who can slip the greatest sized king piece onto the board without the opponent or the judge panel calling it. The largest piece a player can risk is fair game, and is not uncommon to see a considerable difference not only in the size of the pieces, but also in the pallor of the opposing players' faces. The origin of the name is generally thought a reference to the phallic nature of such politics in chess.
Again, there is some question about Wang being correct.
Right.
That was a very strong
It was a strong
contender.
Answer. I mean, I did notice that he did correctly translate millimetres into inches.
Yes,
so,
indeed.
You know, that is a bit of correctness there. That could count against him
it's
in the final.
We could go to the TV.
Right.
We could go to the TV judges. But
could go to the
I think it should make the shortlist. It's very strong.
Right. And this one comes from Hannah Harris, who writes, "The Jigme Wangchuck is the most powerful dance in the world. It has only been performed once in human history, but once was enough. On July the 11th, 1804, Vice President Aaron Burr and his arch-nemesis Alexander Hamilton met in Weehawken, New Jersey, to settle things once and for all in the most famous dance-off of all time. Aaron Burr went first and danced Michael Jackson's Thriller. But little Alex Hamilton had learnt the most ancient and powerful Jigme Wangchuck from the great Isaac Newton himself, who had invented it as an antidote to his potent new creation, calculus. Burr didn't stand a chance. The sheer force of the dance blew him 40 yards away and briefly knocked him unconscious. Hamilton had won. Unfortunately, he had little time to savour his victory. The Jigme Wangchuck was so powerful, his legs had melted away. His butt had been shaken so hard it had fallen clean off. And his heart, which had been beating in time to the music, had stopped when the music ended. The Jigme Wangchuck has never been performed since. Moving story.
It's so wrong on so many different levels. That's the strongest we've heard so far.
That's a strong... Well done, Hannah Harris. That's a very strong answer. Hannah from Beechwood, Ohio. And now, Tom, it's up to you to call the two winners. Everyone, brace yourselves.
Everybody, Andy, was looking for the most wrong answer, and the most wrong answer that I could see was a fermented penguin drink made in Greenland. Of course, penguins, native to Antarctica. I thought that was very strong. And being a good editor, it was brief as well. So
right.
That was something quite good for me. And the last one was very strong. A dance-off to Michael Jackson's Thriller 200 years before it was actually made.
Yeah, that's pretty wrong, isn't it?
Involving the fictional state of America. Yeah, I think that's... That's definitely the two winners.
So,
there.
We have our winners. The winners are Hannah Harris, who said that Jigme Wangchuck is the most powerful dance in the world, performed only once through human history. Hannah has requested that her copy of my book be signed by Florence Nightingale. Who else? It's on its way to Ohio as we speak, by which I mean we'll put it in the post next week. And the other winner is Mark Loggins, who said that Jigme Wangchuck is an alcoholic beverage made by the Inuit people of Greenland. Two superlatively wrong answers. Thank you, everyone who's entered. You have kept me richly entertained as I sit at home waiting for my next child to emerge. So do keep your emails coming in to thebugle@timesonline.co.uk and your final hotties from history for 2008. Also, visit the Bugle page, timesonline.co.uk/thebugle. Where you can get all of the Bugle columns, now sadly discontinued, but all the ones, in case you missed them, are there. And also, any back episodes that you want to play to your family over Christmas are on the website. And finally, we'll finish with the regular Bugle forecast, and the forecast is John will be back next week. Hooray! Bye-bye, Buglers. Bye-bye.
This is a Times Online podcast. For more podcasts, go to timesonline.co.uk/podcasts.